This is VOA News. I'm Laurel Bowman. A man in the Philippines has died from the coronavirus. It's the first reported death outside mainland China since the outbreak began in December. The AP's Sarah Bassett has more.
The Philippines has reported the first death from a new virus outside of China. A 44-year-old Chinese man from Wuhan was admitted to hospital last month after experiencing flu-like symptoms. Philippines Health Secretary Francisco Duque III says the patient developed severe pneumonia.
The patient was stable and showed signs of improvement. However, the condition of the patient deteriorated within the last 24 hours, resulting in his demise.
Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte approved a temporary ban on all travelers, except Filipinos, from China and its autonomous regions. The US, Japan, Singapore, and Australia have imposed similar restrictions, despite criticism from China and an assessment from the World Health Organization that they were unnecessarily hurting trade and travel. I'm Sarah Bassett.
More than 300 people have died from the coronavirus, with more than 14,000 confirmed cases in at least 27 countries. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is urging Kazakhstan to join Washington in pressing Beijing over its treatment of Muslim minorities. It's a sensitive matter for the Central Asian nation, which has close ties to China. The United Nations and human rights groups estimate that between 1 and 2 million mostly ethnic Uyghurs have been subjected to intense surveillance, arbitrary detentions, and forced indoctrination as part of what Beijing calls an anti-terrorism campaign. Pompeo is meeting top officials in the former Soviet Republic to express U.S. support for Kazakhstan, an energy-rich nation which Washington sees as a counterweight to Russia and Central Asia. This is VOA News. Key U.S. Republican senators say that President Donald Trump's request to Ukraine to launch an investigation that would benefit him politically was wrong, but not enough to convict him on impeachment charges and remove him from office. He's expected to be acquitted this week. Meanwhile, the first votes of the 2020 presidential election will be cast on Monday in Iowa, the AP's Ben Thomas reports.
Dream big!
That's Senator Elizabeth Warren rallying supporters in Urbandale, Iowa to canvass for her.
And let's win!
As the presidential campaign kicks into high gear for Democrats ahead of Monday's Iowa caucuses.
Mayors get things done.
South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg is making multiple stops.
And now I have one more chance, eye to eye, to ask you to support me.
Let me say this.
Senator Bernie Sanders says Democrats must unite to defeat a president he describes as dangerous.
But if we do not win, we will support the winner, and I know that every other candidate will do the same.
And former Vice President Joe Biden is offering his vision for the country.
Joe Biden's America, self-interest will not be confused with national interest. And no one, not even the president of the United States will be above the law. I promise you that.
I'm Ben Thomas.
Reaction has been mixed across the United Kingdom since the UK left the European Union Friday. UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson has called on his countrymen and women to celebrate a new dawn, this from the streets of Northern Ireland.
I think this could be beneficial. Long term, it's going to bring about the reunification of the country. For now, we get the best of both worlds.
European leaders express remorse at the UK's departure. It's the first nation to leave in the EU's history, but they signaled a bright future for its remaining 27 members. It's Super Bowl Sunday, one of the most exciting days in sports in the United States. The San Francisco 49ers face the Kansas City Chiefs in today's playoffs. Nearly 100 million people are expected to watch.
Where there is no shadow of me, spring will be early. It's a certainty.
And that's the handler for Punxsutawney Phil, the American groundhog famous for predicting the end of winter in the U.S., who did not see his shadow Sunday morning. This means spring is coming early. February 2nd marks Groundhog Day, when a Pennsylvania groundhog traditionally makes an appearance above ground near the cozy tree stump he calls home. For more on this and other stories, visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Laurel Bowman, and this is VOA News.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
They need to get out of office is to resign and allow people who have the capacity to get this job done. Because people talk about these security issues as if it's something for kids. It's only when you lose your loved one, it's only when they behave your father or your mother that you know the pain these people are going through every day and the fear these communities are living in every day because they don't know when these bandits and men of the underworld is going to attack them.
A major Nigerian opposition party says plans by the government to address the U.S. travel restriction may not work.
We believe that our judiciary is independent, and therefore those that were seized, took the matter to court. If they are not satisfied with the verdict of the constitutional court, the laws of this country provide that they can go and appeal at the Supreme Court of Malawi, which is the highest court.
The Malawian Information Minister calls for calm ahead of the Constitutional Court ruling over the presidential election dispute Monday.
Whether government should have the right to limit religious freedom in the name of public safety. So we have like 49% saying that no, freedom of religion should be absolute and there should be no way that the government should have the power to regulate what is said in the places of worship.
And a new Afrobarometer finding shows a majority of Africans have faith in their religious leaders more than their political representatives. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The Coalition of United Political Parties, or CUPP, a major Nigerian opposition group, says to set up a committee to address the U.S. visa restrictions may not work. Ikenga Imu Ugochinyere, spokesperson for the CUPP, says the administration appears to have failed to address the growing insecurity in the country, which he says contributed to the decision by Washington to impose the ban. This after the Nigerian presidency says it will maintain productive relations with the U.S. and others on matters of global security. But Ikenga Imu Ugochinyere, spokesperson for the CUPP, tells me the government's reaction to set up yet another committee when there's a serious challenge is disappointing.
Our reaction is very simple. The president lacks the capacity to govern Nigeria, and the consequences of those incompetences is what you are seeing today. A collapsing economy, a collapsed national security, and international ostracization. As it stands today, Nigeria is being treated as a pariah state. The worse than it was during the time of General Sonny Abacha. You can steal a presidential mandate. You can get to power by any means you want, but you cannot recruit or hire or buy the capacity to govern. The president does not have the capacity to govern. His foreign policy is a total mess, and that is why the U.S. is hammering us today, because there's a lot of security challenges. There's a lot of secrecy and non-sharing of relevant information with the U.S. government.
But Ikenga, the government came out with a statement saying that it has set up this commission, which supporters say is a demonstration of the commitment of the administration to fight this insecurity and combat it, following a meeting with security chiefs by the president. Isn't it a demonstration that the president is listening to the people and addressing their challenging needs, particularly security?
If we continue going on the path the president have chosen, possibly the republic will not survive the next 3-4 years. The nation is going to be in total political, economic chaos and confusion. And all we are saying is that what the U.S. said or did to Nigeria in terms of the visa ban is something that we have been saying. The inability to fulfill their aspect of their relationship with the U.S. that led to the ban, it is the same thing that made them not to fulfill the security demands of the country that have made bandits and terrorists to be killing and celebrating with the blood of Nigeria without having any solution. It is the same reason why corruption has become the order of the day. It's the same reason why there is total breakdown of law and order in every part of the country. It's the same reason why there is ethnic and religious cleansing and killing all over part of the country.
But Ikenga, the president has come up with a statement saying that it's setting up a committee to be headed by the Minister of Interior to address some of these concerns. Why do you think that is not enough?
First of all, he has been setting up committees on these security issues, committees on economy, committees on how to live in peace with one another, and all sorts of committees that have ended up being useless and waste of taxpayers' money. The committee that was set up by the president, to me, is of no use. Because what led us to this problem? You have institutions of government that is supposed to make provisions for this instance to happen. Now, we're running into this problem. Instead of strengthening your institution, you're setting up another committee to go and look into it, an ad hoc committee for that matter. So when they finish looking into it, now what will happen in the next 4 or 5 years again? The institution will reoccur again. So to me, the committee action is not enough. It's just that he's trying to camp nerves in the country because the citizens are so disappointed with him and the people are angry. And I strongly believe that the committee is dead on arrival, is of no use, and is not the right way to deal with it. So we don't see it as anything useful.
Well, responding to the travel restriction, the presidency issued a statement saying that Nigeria remains committed to maintaining productive relations with the United States and other international allies, especially on matters of global security. What is your reaction to that?
The committee is of no use. The government is playing to the gallery. Look at the Homeland Statement and understand the reason why the nation was placed on immigrant visa ban. You see, the border is so porous. People from Niger, Chad, Somalia entering Nigeria, and the procedure for acquiring Nigerian identity card and passport is so porous in all those states around KBs and Fara, Sokoto, and so on and so forth. So the thing you need to do is to protect the border. And you see the government recent policy to allow Africans to come in and get visa on arrival. And when these people come in, they can acquire Nigerian passports so easily. And from Nigeria, they can go to U.S. or go to Yemen or Somalia for terrorist training. So the committee being set up to handle this is playing to the gallery. It's of no use. It's useless. This is something government needs to, you know, up this security arrangement and close our borders, scrutinize people coming in and find a way to identify who is even a Nigerian before you get Nigerian identity. So the committee, which is an ad hoc arrangement, is just to play to the gallery and make Nigerians feel that the government is working when they are not actually doing anything. Don't talk about global security when you can't have internal security. The only contribution you can make to global security as a sovereign nation is to first of all provide internal security for your own republic. Because if you don't provide internal security for your own republic, what you'll be exporting to the global community is terrorism and destruction. So the only contribution Buhari can make to global security is to protect lives and property in Nigeria, which is the only constitutional responsibility he has. And by so doing, you are contributing to global security. The bandits have taken control of greater part of the country. We now live in fear every day. So the president should not be talking about global security commitment. He should focus on what Section 14 of the Constitution gives him, which is protection of lives and property of every Nigerian. And if he cannot do that, like everybody said, the president needs to get out of office. He should resign and allow people who have the capacity to get this job done. Because people talk about these security issues as if it's something for kids. It's only when you lose your life, loved one, it's only when they behave your father or your mother that you know the pain these people are going through every day and the fear these communities are living in every day because they don't know when these bandits and men of the underworld is going to attack them.
Ekenga Imo Ugochinyere is the spokesperson for the Nigerian Coalition of United Political Parties, or CUPP. He spoke with me from the capital, Abuja. Meanwhile, Nigerian main opposition People's Democratic Party, or PDP, is calling for an international intervention to prevent what it says is the use of the judiciary to score political points. At a protest march at the embassies of the U.S., United Kingdom and the European Union, leaders of the party said a recent judgment which removed the group's elected governor in Imo State is unacceptable. The protests come after Emeka Ehedioha, the former Imo State governor, filed a petition with the Supreme Court asking that he be reinstated as the governor of the state. Kola Ologbodiyan, spokesperson for Nigeria's main opposition party, tells me the Supreme Court's judgment is a clear case of an injustice.
We are very concerned about the ruling party and its government undermining of our judiciary and legislative institutions. We are very concerned by the seeming helplessness of President Muhammadu Buhari in handling the insecurity situation in our country, Nigeria. We are worried that the Muhammadu Buhari refused to sign the amendment to the Electoral Act before the 2019 election, and he has also not agreed to sign the amendment, even as we speak now. The purpose of the amendment is to provide for transmission of results directly from the polling unit to collation center, so as to stop the abuses of the electoral process. We are very concerned that The judiciary, in a way that we cannot explain and in a manner that we are here to understand in our country today, overthrew a duly elected government in Imo State and replaced the governor with the candidate of the ruling government.
What do you want from these countries or partners of Nigeria to do, asking them to intervene? What specifically do you want them to do?
We believe that Nigeria is a member of several world bodies. We have agreed on the charters to ensure a peaceful and united country. And as well, we believe that the countries that we have taken our complaints to can intervene to appeal to the government in Nigeria today to ensure due process. All our electoral, our judicial, and our security life. We believe that they can advise. We believe that they can intervene in the process to advise, to appeal to the sitting government.
Supporters of the ruling party are saying the concerns you have are internal, and that you calling or seeking for intervention is unpatriotic and undermines the sovereignty of Nigeria. What's your response to that?
That sounds like remarks of illiterate, and that is totally baseless, because Nigeria is a member of world bodies. And we also know, like I earlier said, that there are areas of agreement that are terrible mechanisms. And what we are saying is that it is not about asking those countries to come and force their decision on the ruling government. That's not what the People's Democratic Party is asking for. What the People's Democratic Party is requiring is a form of intervention, which could be in form of advice to the ruling government.
What do you say to the supporters who are saying that this is yet another demonstration that you want to use the international community or partners of Nigeria to usurp the legitimately elected government of Nigeria, after which they said your efforts to seek to overthrow the verdict was dismissed by the courts?
It's absolutely a misplaced conclusion. On the issue of the judgment concerning Imo State, our party and our governorship candidate that was duly elected is going back to the Supreme Court to ask for a review and reversal of the judgment. And for everybody to say that the People's Democratic Party is an attempt to subdue the government and seek to forcibly remove a sitting government is also totally and absolutely misplaced. That's not correct. Are those members and supporters of the All Progressive Congress and President Muhammadu Buhari, are they happy with the current situation in our country? Are they happy that a journey of 2 hours on the road become impossible as a result of banditry and vandalism between Abuja and Kaduna? The security situation has become worsening. And we need to draw the attention of the world what's happening in Nigeria today. And that's what the People's Democratic Party has done.
Kola Ologbodiyan is the spokesperson for the Nigerian main opposition People's Democratic Party, or PDP. He spoke with me from the capital, Abuja. The Malawian Information Minister is calling on citizens to remain calm and avoid violence ahead of the much-anticipated ruling by judges of the Constitutional Court Monday. The 5-panel judges will issue judgment over the disputed outcome of the presidential election. In a press statement, Information Minister Mark Butomani called on supporters of political groups and other stakeholders to respect the rule of law. For more about measures the administration seeks to implement to maintain law and order, I reach Information Minister Mark Butomani.
This case, as you know, has generated a lot of interest from all and sundry. So government issued a statement through my office calling upon Malawians, first and foremost, to maintain peace. And therefore, it is important that they, at such a crucial time as this one, Malawians should continue to maintain and safeguard the peace which we have enjoyed for many years. So our call is for Malawians to maintain peace. Number two, we are calling upon all stakeholders, particularly the political parties, to sensitize or to prepare their supporters for the verdict that is coming tomorrow. Because obviously there can only be one winner from this case. So those that are going to win, let them celebrate gracefully. Those that may not win the case, well, let them take the channel of peace and get it gracefully as well. So that is our call.
This is an uncharted waters for Malawi, since this is the first time since the country's independence that presidential election result is being challenged in court. So the stakes appear to be high. Security-wise, how is the government going to handle this?
We are very prepared. This week, I managed to speak to the Inspector General of Police who assured me, and of course assuring the nation, that security will be tight during this time. And as you know, that according to our laws, our Malawi Defense Forces can also come in to support or to backstop their counterparts. So the Malawi Army is also ready to come in with their support. But primarily, our police service is able and capable and well prepared to handle our security matters during this time. Of course, as you know, that the time is a bit unique. Therefore, there will be other strategies that they will employ, which are not normal in terms of their operations, but they have announced that to the public in terms of the roads, that will be some undesignated roadblocks, for example, the searching of the vehicles that will be getting into the city of Lilongwe, and other strategies that they will employ during this time, which are extraordinary. But the bottom line is police is well prepared to handle the situation during this time.
What other strategies will the administration implement in terms of fake news being circulated across media platforms, including social media platforms? Because some people express concern that that could potentially, if not handled appropriately, create some form of disaffection and tension.
I agree with you, Peter, that the phenomenon of fake news is our thorn, or is a thorn in our flesh. So all we've done is to warn, even in the statement that we issued this week, we are warning Malawians, those that, are in the habit of propagating fake news, to stop outrightly. Because in this country, we have laws, the Electronic Transaction and Cyber Security Act. You know, in there are provisions where it is possible to punish the offenders once they are tracked down.
If the ruling comes out from the Constitutional Court and one party or two parties that are challenging the election result, judgment doesn't go on their behalf, and they decide to embark on a peaceful protest to display their displeasure, how will your administration handle it?
We do not expect that any party that may not win tomorrow, they will be holding protests. That is something that will be surprised if it will happen. Because, you know, the reason this matter is in court is that we are trusting our court. We believe that our judiciary is independent, and therefore those that were aggrieved, took the matters to court. If they are not satisfied with the verdict of the Constitutional Court, the laws of this country provide that they can go and appeal at the Supreme Court of Malawi, which is the highest court.
What about the case of supporters of the ruling DPP? If the ruling doesn't go as they expect to go, how will the government handle the situation?
Our call, Peter, is to all political parties, including our own, the DPP, the ruling party. That's our call. So we are not, separating it from the system. The DPP has probably the largest following in this country. And therefore, it is also the message also goes to the DPP that, it is important to maintain peace. It is important to uphold the peace.
Mark Botomani is the Malawian Information Minister. He spoke with me from the capital, Lilongwe. A newly released Afrobarometer poll shows a majority of Africans identifies with a religious faith, trust their religious leaders, and express tolerance of people of other faiths. It also shows that in most countries, a majority of Africans prefer civil over religious law as the basis for government. Afrobarometer is a non-partisan research network that conducts public attitude surveys on democracy, governance, economic conditions, and related issues in Africa. For more on the survey, I read Josephine Apianyamecha-Sani, a spokesperson at Afrobarometer.
Basically, the data I'm going to be sharing with you is based on over 45,000 interviews that were done in 34 African countries between September 2016 and 2018. And that is like the seventh round of the Afrobarometer survey.
What was the major finding in this round of survey conducted by the Afrobarometer?
Some of the key findings are that Africans are very religious. We have about 95% of Africans identifying with one religion or the other. We have a majority, that's 56%, saying they're Christians, and about 1 in 3 self-identifying as Muslim. And only about 4% said they are atheists or have no religion at all. Also, when it comes to how active they are joining religious meetings outside the normal worship hours, we have 1 in 3 Africans saying they are either leaders or active members of religious groups that meet outside the normal worship hours. And this is predominantly common among Christian countries such as Liberia, Kenya, and Zambia, and far less common in Muslim countries such as Tunisia and Morocco, where we have just about 2% saying they are that active. Now, when you compare the youth and the elderly, and also the rural and urban residents, you realize that younger adults and urban residents are less active in such religious groups than the older adults and rural residents. Another interesting finding that we found was how much Africans contact their religious leaders. We realized that when it comes to discussing issues or problems, Africans are far more likely to run to their religious leaders than all the other public officials, such as traditional leaders, local government councillors, or even their members of parliament. And so we have about 4 in 10 Africans saying that during the previous year, they contacted their religious leaders to discuss an issue or a problem that they had.
Why do they have more confidence or repose confidence in their religious leaders more than they do of the people they voted for in terms of their political leaders?
Well, unfortunately, we do not ask the why question, so I'm unable to tell you why. But we can also derive some judgment from another key finding, which is on trust. So when you look at how much Africans say they trust their religious leaders compared to the other leaders, you realize that the religious leaders are far more widely trusted by Africans than other public officials, such as the president, members of parliament, and etc. So we have about 2/3 of Africans saying that they trust their religious leaders somewhat or a lot, compared to only just about 1/2 who say they trust their president, and there's about 4 in 10 who say they trust their members of parliament. Also, when it comes to perceived corruption, religious leaders are perceived to be far less corrupt than the other leaders.
Reading the survey, something really came up saying that half of the respondents say government should have the power to regulate religious speech in the name of public safety, in spite of some of these constitutions guaranteeing free speech.
Yeah, so you realize that Africans are divided when it comes to whether government should have the right to limit religious freedom in the name of public safety. So we have like 49% saying that no, freedom of religion should be absolute, and there should be no way that the government should have the power to regulate what is said in the places of worship. But we also have almost the same proportion, that's like 47% saying that the government should be able to regulate some of these religious speeches, especially if the public safety is threatened. So when it comes to your support for the levels of freedom of public speech, you realize that in countries that have experienced some sort of extremist violence, like Tunisia, Mali, Cameroon, Burkina Faso, and Niger, these countries are less likely to support freedom of religious speech. So it's probably in line with the kind of experiences that they've had. They feel like it's very, very important for the freedom of speech to be regulated by government, especially if it threatens the public security.
Josephine Apianya Michesani is a spokesperson at Afrobarometer. She spoke with me from the Ghanaian capital, Accra.
This is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, the Great Lakes region has a turbulent history marked by conflict at the expense of its citizens. Human rights in the Great Lakes region on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
This is the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa Sports with Douglas Mpuga, and that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs, and music from our African collection. But first, the World Food Program warns millions of people in Niger, Mali, and Burkina Faso do not have enough to eat and are in desperate and immediate need of food aid. For VOA, Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva.
A recent UN food assessment in the Central Sahel finds 3.3 million people are going hungry, a rise of nearly 1 million since last year. World Food Program spokeswoman Elizabeth Beers warns this alarming situation is expected to worsen without sustained humanitarian support.
The number of food insecure people is expected to double as the June lean season gets underway, pushing 4.8 million people into hunger, up from 2.4 million in 2019.
Hunger is wreaking havoc on the nutritional status of people in these countries. The UN Children's Fund reports more than 700,000 children under five suffer from life-threatening severe acute malnutrition. The United Nations reports nearly a million people in the region have been displaced by conflict, which is devastating agriculture and rural economies. Many people are fleeing in search of food and grazing land for their cattle. Beers tells VOA people are resorting to extreme measures to survive.
They skip meals, they sell their assets, and in some conflict-affected areas, some people have a lot of difficulty to find something to eat.
WFP is working to scale up its humanitarian operation to assist 2 million people across the three Sahelian countries. It is urgently appealing for $227 million to provide life-saving food aid over the next 6 months. Money also will be used for education, nutrition, and health, and to shore up livelihoods. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
It's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Douglas Mpuga. Hello, Douglas.
Hello, Peter, and good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. Let's begin with football. Al Ahly of Egypt drew 1-1 at Al Hilal of Sudan on Saturday to book a quarter-final place. A routine 2-0 win for Etoile du Sahel of Tunisia at home to Platinum of Zimbabwe gave them first place in the group with 12 points, followed by Ahly with 11 and Hilal with 10. Etoile will be seeded for the last eight draw with the other group winners, TP Mazembe of DR Congo, Mamelodi Sundowns of South Africa, and Esperance of Tunisia. Ahly, fellow Egyptian Zamalek and Casablanca clubs, Wydad and Raja, are in the other half of the draw, and all eight title contenders have won the Elite Africa Club Championship competition. Ahly has been champions eight times, Mazembe and Zamalek five each, Esperance four, Raja three, Wydad two, and Etoile and Sundowns one each. Aside from Group B, the only other outstanding issue going into the final group games was the contest for first place in Group C between Mamelodi Sundowns and Wydad Casablanca. Sundowns needed only a draw against Wydad to stay top of the table, but collected all 3 points thanks to a 1-0 win in Pretoria, courtesy of a penalty converted by Brazilian Ricardo Nascimento. Although in opposite halves of the draw, they will not meet again in quarterfinals, as the rules bar clubs from the same group are being paired. The countdown continues for the Tokyo Olympics, the year's biggest international sporting event. The multi-sport festival in Japan officially opens July 24th and goes through August 9th. If we look back at the last Olympics held in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil in 2016, Kenya was the top performing African team. The Kenyans won 13 medals, including 6 gold, and all the medals came in athletics. For the Tokyo Games, Kenya will represent Africa in the Olympics Women's Volleyball Tournament. The Kenyan women have stepped up preparations ahead of the Olympics, as we hear now from Ruben Chama in Nairobi.
The Kenyan women's volleyball team
have won accolades from President Uhuru Kenyatta and other senior government officials and the general public. Paul Bitok is the team's head coach.
We have lined up various international friendly matches. We are starting our official training in April. That is after the teams finish the African Club Championship, where all our players now have been released to join their clubs. And this is because it's an international competition, part of our training for the Olympics. Official training now will start in April 1st. We will have 2 months training in Kenya. Then the team will leave for Turkey in June.
Thereafter, the team will proceed to Japan, where they will play 3 international friendly matches a few weeks to the kickoff of the Olympic tournament. The Kenyan national women's volleyball team was also named the best 2019 sports team of the year in the country. Bitok says he remains hopeful that the 2020 Tokyo Summer Olympic outing will be successful.
This is our third time to participate in the Olympics. We are close to for the last 16 years. So this was a good history for the team of Kenya to have this slot for Africa. And we are meeting at 12 countries in the world. The team will be representing Africa continent. Now Kenya is coming back again as the champion of Africa.
As part of the initial preparations for the global extravaganza, Bitok says the team has enlisted new young players to improve their performance. Noel Murambi is among the key players. She says, "I'm delighted that we've qualified to go for the Olympic Games. It's been a hard-won competition and long time coming. We thank God and we now look forward to having good training, including international friendly matches that will prepare us for the global tournament."
Matarajio yenye tumejipanga ni ati tunataka to train vizuri, to have enough time kwa training, to have good training, kama itawezekana to have international matches zinaweza tusaidia.
The Kenyan team beat Nigeria in 3 sets, 25-15, 25-21 and 25-12 to qualify for the Olympic tournament. Mercy Moin is the team captain. She says our players will emerge victorious.
I feel good because we are going to do the best training. We train normally like a man or less than a man. But this round we have like 7 months of preparation, so I think we are going to do our best.
Kenya's team is in Pool A in the Tokyo Olympic Games alongside top-ranked teams such as Serbia, Brazil, South Korea, the Dominican Republic and host Japan. The players remained optimistic that they will display a splendid performance. But what is the message to their supporters? Noel Murambi makes her direct appeal.
First of all, I want to thank them. They supported us before and after. Before we went for the qualifiers in Cameroon, they were with us, so I want to thank them. And for the championship that we are going, the Olympic now, I just want to say that may they support us more fully, and we really appreciate.
This is Ruben Chama in Nairobi.
Final in tennis, Novak Djokovic captured a record extending 8th Australian Open title on Sunday to guarantee his return to number 1 in the FedEx ATP rankings. The Serbian star fought back to beat 5th-seeded Austrian Dominic Thiem 6-4, 4-6, 2-6, 6-3, 6-4 over 4 hours in Sunday's final for his 17th Grand Slam championship crown. Only Roger Federer, 20, and Rafael Nadal, 19, have won more major singles titles in the sport's history. On Saturday, American Sofia Kenin fulfilled her potential by winning a first Grand Slam title with a victory over Spain's Gabin Muguruza. Kenin won 4-6, 6-2, 6-2 against two-time major winner Muguruza in Melbourne. Kenin, who turned 21 in November, is the youngest Austrian Open champion since Russian Maria Sharapova in 2008. And that's about it for this edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Now back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Douglas. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports. Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospect in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under-Secretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa.
Even before the World Health Organization, WHO, declared the coronavirus epidemic in China as an international concern, African states have been using their best efforts to control the situation. However, the latest reports should indicate that this virus is very difficult to control. The Chinese government took a very difficult decision at the beginning to lock down a major city of 15 million in the hope of controlling the virus. But latest report shows that the virus has now spread to every province in China. And the people of Hong Kong are now protesting that no Chinese from the mainland should go to Hong Kong. The difficulty is that not much is known of this virus, and it presents a challenge not only to China, but to the rest of the world. You may have read about European and American airlines stopping the flights to China. Also, of these European and American governments flying back to the home country, the citizens that have been living or traveling in China. A similar process has been taking place in Africa at great cost. By the way, economists are saying that this virus may have a significant economic impact in China, which may also affect the world. It is expected that China's economic performance might drop about 6%. And we know that when China is slowed down, it has always an impact on the world economy. But if you look at Egypt, Egypt has a very lucrative business of tourists with China. But out of the abundance of caution, the government of Egypt had to stop this lucrative trade. This is also true for Kenya, where the tourist trade is vibrant and the government has been benefiting from the economic gains. Yet it had to stop this tourist trade, even though this is going to have a negative impact on Kenyan Airways, which has been struggling. So this epidemic in China is having some impact. Now, it is true also that some African governments have been attempting to bring their nationals from China. But this is much more difficult to determine because most of the Africans who are in China are students who are on scholarship. And many of them in interviews have expressed preference to stay where they are, recognizing that going back home may not present a more stable condition since there may not be facilities to cope if they turn out to be ill. But to the credit of many African countries, they have taken serious precautions to control all travelers, Chinese and non-Chinese, who have been in contact with those having this virus, and in the airports, they are testing vigorously all of these passengers to make sure that they do not infect the population. In one or two cases, they have detected it, and they have tried to find out whether these people are subject to the disease. There are two laboratories in Africa, one in Senegal, another in South Africa, that can do it. And already they have sent some of these tests to South Africa, and in two cases, these travelers have been shown to have been free from any problems. So they are going on this thing. The problem which is now clear, which may not be known, is in East Africa in particular, and in Nigeria, there is a vivid trade that goes on between China and Africans. And they are now in a dilemma. Many of them used to travel twice a month or once a week, and now they have to stop all of this traveling. And even their Chinese customers or partners asked to stay back. So this is going to have some kind of economic repercussions. But Africans throughout the continent must take further precautions, because one does not know how long it will take to control this virus in China. And therefore, preparation has to be made to prevent any kind of catastrophe should it spread to the African continent. It is true that in Asia, there is much more panic because there are much more interaction between Chinese and Asians in Indonesia or in the Philippines. Africans thus far have been very calm, methodical, and vigilant. This is very good. Hopefully, this will continue, but go further to prevent African people from becoming infected with the virus, which has not yet been shown to be easy to control. I thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Juna, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs. And it's Sunday on Nightline Africa. This is the time we get to relax and reflect and flashback with music from the continent. You're hearing from Chris Beat featuring Yemi Alade and Scales, coming your way with a rhythm. And then T Classic follows with Nobody Flying Past You. Nandi with Nino Geshe. And then Akon ends it all with Welcome to Africa.
Wanna like the fire, baby, dance for. We don't need the water, make it bang bang. All my sexy ladies shake it bang bang. What's up? Oh no, that boy with that big ass. You want me to your address? Shake me with no regrets. Next tomorrow, I decision.
Turn up, flood them, turn up the beast. Turn up, flood them, turn up the beast. Turn up, turn up, turn up, turn up, turn up.
Let me see you bounce to the beat, like.
Omo, they must to jam my song. They must to sing along. Can't say they like the rhythm, rhythm. Omo, they jam my song. They must to jam my song. They must to get me down. Can't just say baby, rhythm, rhythm. Omo, they dance my song. Omo, your cake size got me so
confused. That's why I wanna bite more than I can chew. That's something to behold me, I love it too. He won only call up him. He won't call only tell up him. He a auto to a jeopardy. He me chop, man, or she chop. So turn up, flood them, must turn up the beast. So turn up, flood them, must turn up the beast. So turn up, turn up, turn up, turn up, turn up.
Let me see you bounce to the beat, like. Nine
jockey, I'm not too young, my son.
We Shoka kisa nini Mimu za kona kupenda na furai Nivike pete ya roho siyo toka Ratupu kupenda na nawe
Sunday Music Spot. Hope you enjoy the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we are on air Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, managing editor Shaka Sali, reporter Douglas Mpuga, producer Saida Hamdoun, and our engineer for today, Nelson Lopez, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, the heart of the wise man lies quiet like limpid water. I'm your host, Peter Clotter, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.